from KDNK Community Access Radio in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States. This is program number 65 of The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience them like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful or just more fun for us and our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people not only to go literally around the world, but around the block to new adventures in their lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer help them to lead a normal life, to people like me, who are totally blind, to sighted parents who have a blind child, blind parents who have sighted children, blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, why so many of us who were born extremely premature are blind from retrolentrofibroplasia, also called RLF, and retinopathy of prematurity, or ROP, and the chances of today's premature babies going blind. Testing the Glide, a mobility device, and making the weather work for you. Many of our older listeners born in the 1940s and 50s are blind or visually impaired from retrolentrofibroplasia, also called RLF. Since many of us were extremely premature, sometimes 90 days or even more, our lungs were undeveloped at birth. So doctors felt that extra oxygen given to us in our incubators made sense. It took more than a decade for the doctors to figure out that oxygen was causing premature babies to go blind. Now, most eye problems caused by oxygen in incubators can be treated. It's called retinopathy of prematurity, or ROP. But in extreme cases, it's still retrolentrofibroplasia, or RLF. Dr. Jennifer Jong is a pediatric ophthalmologist at Children's Hospital, Colorado, and she's on the front line of preventing premature babies from going blind from the oxygen needed to keep the babies alive.
When the babies are born, their environment is so different from the womb, and even room air oxygen is at a higher amount than what they were experiencing before they were born. And even though oxygen is necessary for babies to survive, too much oxygen or changes in these oxygen levels can interfere with their normal vessel development. And that we found that the oxygen therapy, if it is too high or too fluctuating, can worsen ROP.
It worsens by causing scar tissue on the back of the eye, which pulls the retina around that's attached to it.
ROP is retinopathy of prematurity, and it's an eye disorder that a prematurely born infant. And it involves the retina, which is the back lining of the eye that senses the light and sends the images to the brain. And so blood vessels in the retina start growing at around 4 months of pregnancy, and it continues to grow until full term and a little bit after birth. But the babies are born prematurely. They're born earlier, and these blood vessels did not have enough time to grow. And so as they try to grow after birth, they can grow into wrong places and wrong shape. And that's what ROP is. This was first discovered back in the 1940s and 50s when mature babies were now surviving with oxygen supplementation and other advances in care. But what they were discovering is that these babies, although they are surviving, were blind because of ROP. Back then, ROP was called retrolentofibroplasia. It's a fancy word for saying that the retina, instead of being in the back of the eye, was now detached and in front of the eye, right behind the lens. And so that's the worst case of ROP, and that's when it was first discovered back in the 1940s and 50s.
Dr. Jung says through 82 years of working with extremely premature babies, doctors have not only learned how to save the lives of the babies, but how to save them from going blind.
We can't really prevent it because these babies are born prematurely and their vessels still need to grow. But we have found out that there are certain risk factors for ROP that we can try to modify, and we can intervene at the right time so that they don't end up developing retinal detachment. Modern day treatment involves anti-VEGF injection, laser treatment, and sometimes surgery.
One of the tools is by giving babies a shot directly into their eyes.
Anti-VEGF injection, it is into the eye. Anti-VEGF, and it's an acronym for endothelial growth. What it does is it reduces the amount of VEGF, which is a factor that the retina produces in order to make these blood vessels. And in order to understand this, I want to kind of talk about a little bit about the two phases of ROP. When the babies are born prematurely, all of a sudden they're in an environment where there's a lot of oxygen, a lot more than in the womb. So what happens after that is that these blood vessels in the back of the eye, they clamp down and they stop growing. Phase one of ROP. And then later on, phase two occurs when the retina doesn't have blood vessels yet, start producing this factor called VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor. And they're producing this factor because they want blood vessels to form because the vessels have clamped down before. And so these VEGF factors lead to vessels forming, but the newly formed vessels are abnormal, which is what ROP is. And so by giving an injection of anti-VEGF, the medication actually blocks the VEGF factors from allowing the vessels to grow abnormally. And so after the injection, the vessels can grow in a more normal manner. They are pretty successful in halting the abnormal process. Some babies may need one injection and allow the vessels to grow. Some people may need more. Again, it's very dependent on the individual and experience of ROP, so it's not like a generalizable rate. When we do these injections, we can reduce the risk of retinal detachment. And our rates of retinal detachment is quite low, which we pride ourselves in. And I think that's because these injections and the laser treatment we do after the injections work very well.
If the shots don't work, the doctors have two other tools for saving the baby's sight.
Surgery is done for the worst case of ROP, where retinal detachment has already occurred. And surgery depends on the type of retinal detachment and the appearance. And so they can sometimes do what we call a vitrectomy, where they make three holes in the eye and use a probe and instruments to go inside the eye to try to put the retina back. Sometimes they need to do what we call the scleral buckle, and that is like putting a belt around the outside of the eye to push the eye in so that the retina can attach back onto the eye. The other treatment, other than the anti-VEGF injection and the surgery, is laser treatment. We do this to destroy the retina that doesn't have the blood vessels yet, but they're the ones who are producing VEGF. So we destroy that retina and tack that retina down so it doesn't detach. And that's what laser treatment is. And even after injections and laser treatment, if they are continuing to detach, then we move on to surgery. And the retina surgeons try to put the retina back in its place. The retina would work if attached back in its place, as long as it hasn't been too much scarring in between the retina and where it should be, and also if it wasn't too long of a period where it was detached.
Eye exams are started very early on the preemies. Their size and how premature determines when they'll have their first exam.
Risk factors for ROP include premature birth, vessels just didn't have enough time to grow, and low birth weight. When they're born very small, they are more likely to have ROP and have worse ROP. The ones who are higher than that are at a lower risk, so we don't do an eye exam on them. So when the babies meet this criteria, they get their first eye exam about 4 weeks after birth, or when sometimes it could be 6 to 8 weeks after birth, depending on how young they were when they were born. Yeah, so ROP private every time we do an exam in stages, zones, and plus disease. And stages are how abnormal they are. Zones are how far they've grown out. And then the plus disease is how twisty and angry looking the vessels are. And so when they reach what we call type 1 ROP, which is a specific combination of the stages, zones, and the P score plus disease, then we recommend treatment. We do these exams with them in the incubator. So we use an eye drop to dilate their pupil. So pupil is the round, very small round circle in the eye. We drops to dilate their eye so we can look into the back of the eye. And we use special instruments to move the eye a certain direction so that we can see where the vessel ends are and to see how abnormal the vessels are. And these exams are continued once every week or once every 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the severity of the ROP.
The babies cry through all of these procedures, which is hard on the parents, but music to the ears of the doctors.
The baby cries, and we actually like crying because that means they're breathing, because sometimes when babies are stressed, they can stop breathing, which can be a problem. When I have this exam performed on me, the worst part is actually the light, which we need in order to look inside the eye, because light is bright, and so the babies usually cry during the exam. But the exam itself is about a minute or less.
The babies are awake for some of these procedures, which is very hard on them.
I think those things that can be done to reduce stress are definitely effective. And so even when we're doing the eye exam, we at university, we have a developmental therapist hold the baby, give them Wheaties, and help hold them afterwards to try stress associated with these exams. And I think it's been very helpful with these babies and all parents too.
Those of us who have RLF in one or both eyes and are totally blind in those eyes have a distinctive eye or eyes. They're probably off-center from being pulled by extra veins and scar tissue. And if you have RLF in only one eye, it'll be a different color from the eye that works, because people will see the detached retina press against the front of your eye. Also, if you have vision in an eye that has ROP, the retina is pulled off center by scar tissue, so your eye may compensate by twisting so that the cornea is lined up with the retina, which may make you look like you're not looking at the person you're talking to. This can be a problem during job interviews. When I was a TV reporter, when I was looking into the camera, it looked like I was looking somewhere else. So my photographer had to tell me where to look until I looked normal. This sometimes made photographers I only worked with occasionally very uncomfortable. ROP can be caused by other things than being born prematurely.
There are other risk factors as well. Like illnesses like infection, brain bleeding, poor weight gain can all contribute to producing ROP.
Dr. Jung says even with all the effective ways to correct ROP, more kids, not fewer kids, are going blind.
ROP is still the leading cause of preventable blindness, even here in the United States. And being aware that ROP can be very severe, that awareness is very necessary, because a lot of parents don't understand the significance of how bad ROP can be. So after babies are discharged, continue to need to do these exams. And we often have parents who may not fully understand why they need these exams. They may not follow up. And even during the NICU stay, some parents don't want their babies to have these eye exams because, again, it does not look pretty with eye doctors trying to look inside these small babies' eyes. So I want parents to understand that ROP is still an ongoing problem. It's not going away, because we're getting better at taking care of young babies to help them survive. And so ROP is here to stay, and we want to continue to do a good job in finding it early and treating it. And so we need everybody's understanding about what ROP is and to help the eye care team take care of our babies.
Dr. Jung says the kids are going blind because parents don't want their kids to go through eye exams that look painful.
ROP is still the leading cause of preventable blindness, even here in the United States. And being aware that ROP can be very severe, that awareness is very necessary because a lot of parents don't understand the significance of how bad ROP can be. So after the babies are discharged, we continue to need to do these exams. And we often have parents who may not fully understand why they need these exams. They may not follow up. And even during the NICU stay, some parents don't want their babies to have these eye exams because, again, it does not look pretty with eye doctors trying to look inside these small babies' eyes. There is one thing that I would like to mention is that, yes, we have seen an increase in ROP across the U.S., and we've seen almost doubling of that, like 4.4% in 2003 to 8.1% in 2019. And the highest increase has been seen in Black and Hispanic babies, as well as babies from lowest household income. And I wanted to stress this because we have multiple studies confirming that ROP rates are higher in certain races and lower socioeconomic status. For the lower socioeconomic status, this is also internationally as well. And so some possible reasons for that may be decreased access to prenatal care, not enough nutrition for moms, lower awareness of ROP. For the racial and ethnic disparities, it's not just actually an ROP issue, it's a U.S. healthcare system issue where across different medical problems, we see that the racial minority groups have poor access to quality care, worse healthcare outcomes. And so there has been a growing awareness of this issue, which I hope will continue to be studied and highlighted in order that we can end up being able to reduce that disparity, not just for ROP, but across U.S. healthcare in general.
Blake Rosnowski helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Somewhere between only 2 and 8% of blind people use white canes or guide dogs. The rest of them don't leave their homes unless they're with a sighted person. Several companies have done things to try and change that. Over the years, more than 100 people or companies have invented some kind of electronic white cane. So far, only one has managed to stay in business, the WeWalk Smart Cane. Some of its features include being able to link to your smartphone, so that it'll give you directions to your destination and information on what you're passing by that you've programmed into it along the way. It will also detect overhead obstacles like tree limbs full of snow. The latest version cost $850. Recently, I tested a totally different guidance tool for blind and people with low vision, called the Glide. I guess you can say I glid. The Glide is not at all like a white cane. Debbie O'Leary describes it from an online picture as something like looking like an upright vacuum cleaner without a bag. It has 2 6-inch wheels on the sides and a semi-sphere with all the electronics and brakes between the wheels. And it has an expanding handle that makes it only 25 inches high when pushed all the way down. That makes it compact enough to fit inside a suitcase, a carry-on bag, or the overhead bin on an airplane. I tested it inside a gymnasium full of obstacles, like chairs, tables, and garbage cans.
Did you feel how it made that little right turn? It's because you were going into the wall and it wanted to get you through the doorway. So right now, if you feel, we have a doorway.
My Glide guide was Luke Buckborough, Glide co-founder.
So we'll engage again and you'll feel that it's making that left turn and now we're walking down a hallway. and it's going to see the left wall, and it's going to guide you away from that. Feel that little left turn, that little right turn.
I tested a prototype that has only some of the features the production models will have, but it still has sonar, a 3D camera, and all the technology to direct me around obstacles. Production models will have two 3D cameras, a speaker, and a microphone, making it possible to tell your glide where you want to go. It will not only guide you there, it will find doorways, elevators, and even the counter at your doctor's office. It will also tell you what businesses you've passed by along the way that you've programmed into it. Testing the glide was interesting. You have to push it forward, but it decides where it will go. It directed me around tables, chairs, garbage cans, and even a wall. If I was outside, it would have guided me around overhead obstacles, like those low-hanging tree limbs, potholes, and it would stop at curbs and stairways. The glide isn't in production yet, but they do plan on beginning to manufacture them at the end of the year. They'll cost $1,500 and $30 a month, which is $360 a year. Go to email at support@glidens.io for more information. The Denver, Colorado Public Library, Resource Department, Ellie Carlson, Joanne Stamp, and Debbie O'Leary helped with this story. You're listening to The Dactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. The following story first ran on program number 54. You can't stop it from raining on your parade, but you can schedule your parade when it's less likely to rain. Most of us don't spend a whole lot of time scheduling parades, but we do schedule outdoor activities and vacations. I worked in Estes Park, Colorado, a town in a valley at the base of steep mountains, and Charlotte County, Florida, on the southwest side of the Florida Peninsula, both big tourist destinations, and both have the same summertime problem: torrential rains and lightning and thunderstorms for about 20 minutes at about the same time every afternoon. In Estes Park, the storms are caused by the sun warming the sides of the steep mountains in the mornings. Since warm air rises, it creates an updraft in the valley. The updrafts bring moisture with them from the water in the valley. The rising moisture forms clouds. When they become supersaturated, it rains hard with lots of thunder and lightning. Something similar happens in Florida, except mountains heating up from the morning sun. Storms are formed when moisture from the Atlantic Ocean on the east coast of Florida heats up, which also causes an updraft laden with moisture, and mixes with the moisture caused the same way from the Gulf of Mexico on Florida's west coast, causing clouds in the middle, which is over the Florida Peninsula. When those clouds become supersaturated in the afternoon, it rains, frequently with thunder and lightning. In both places, the afternoon rains are so much a part of daily life, the locals don't think about telling tourists that it's likely to rain about 1 o'clock every afternoon. So research where you're going, either through the National Weather Service weather apps or by asking people in your hotel if it usually rains about the same time every day. Then you can schedule indoor activities like lunch, shopping, and museums, instead of being caught in a lightning storm on top of a mountain, on a golf course, or in a canoe or whitewater raft, a long way from shelter. Dr. Sam Ng helped with this story. It's my talking scale, reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please let us know by sending an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell Traveler the American way with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on AfterSight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and Audio Information Networks in additional states. It's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine and available wherever you get podcasts, and by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people and organizations that made today's program possible. Be My Eyes Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Leslie Steffens, Pat Conero, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Cody Lee, Kaylee Romero, and Raleigh Burley. This has been The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This is a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.